This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Consumer financial contracts, including student loan contracts, and we urge them to do so. And then regarding the lack of refinancing options, again,
we're in record
low interest rates, and people should be able to take advantage of those low interest rates and refinance their loans.
Pam, 5 seconds.
Yeah, I think we need to contextualize this. The amount that we're talking about here is maybe $2,600 total over the life of the loan. By no means does this particular public policy solution really address the systemic nature of the problem. We're going to have to reduce the amount of money that students owe currently.
I want to thank Pam Brown and Micah Hoffman. That does it for today's show. We have two specials in the coming days. Thursday, we look at the Pentagon Papers. On Friday, John Lewis on the Voting Rights Act. And we will continue to follow Egypt with Sharifa Belkadus. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is local novelist Robert Peet, author of the new book Sisyphus Shrugged, which has been getting rave reviews.
I'm Bobby Davis. After a life of crime and addiction and 18 years in prison, I decided to make a change. I wrote and illustrated a children's book that was recently published. Who says people can't change? Hear my story. Tune into Prison Pipeline July 8th at 6:30 p.m.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
It's 8:03, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, progressive talk radio, 5 days a week on your community radio station. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, on the eve of Independence Day, we're taking a look at ideas, the political ideas that shape our government and our communities. Our guest is local novelist Robert Peet, whose newest book, Sisyphus Shrugged, is a response to Ayn Rand. Robert has a reading from the book later this month at St. John's Booksellers. Robert, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You know what, Robert? When I first met you earlier this year and you said you had written a novel that was a response to Ayn Rand, I just went, oh my God, no. Come on, get a life. Go kiss a girl, you know? And then I found out you're a family guy. You know, you have a life. And I took a moment this morning to do a quick web search for Ayn Rand, and I pulled up dozens of links to stories about current events relating to her in some way. I want to just read a couple headlines because it amazed me. So first at the New York Times, I did that, and I found Ayn Rand would not approve of Paul Ryan. Okay, that was from last year, right? The Man Who Loved Ayn Rand, you know, was another one. Ayn Rand and the World She Made. Here's one that really stuck out for me. Lululemon Athletica combines Ayn Rand and yoga. Okay, and here, just on a quick, just a general web search, I found one argument Ayn Rand wouldn't win in New York Magazine. The Ridiculous Rise of Ayn Rand, The Chronicle of Higher Education. And then I found on Forbes, okay, how would Ayn Rand have commented on last week's Supreme Court race ruling? But really what everybody wants to know is how to say her name. Anyway, talk about your book, Robert Peet. Why did you want to write this book? Where did it come from?
Well, I had heard of Atlas Shrugged for many years. And
Atlas Shrugged is Ayn Rand's biggest book.
Yes, it's her most successful and famous, and it's been referred to as the right-wing Bible, because a lot of right-wingers use it as their gospel, or at least their pretext for pursuing the policies they pursue. Obviously, I do not agree with those policies, but I had heard of her reputation. I was a little intimidated. And then I decided to take her head on. And once I did, I was a lot less intimidated, actually, because I just found a lot of it pretty ridiculous. But I've studied her a lot in the last year. And frankly, I'm a stay-at-home daddy, and my writing is what keeps me sane, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. That's actually what keeps me going, having a good project. But the more I learned about her, the more I realized that what she was really doing was responding to her upbringing under the Soviet Union.
Yeah, tell about when she was born. Who was she?
She was born in 1905. Her name was really Alyssa Rosenbaum.
We can all say that. What? Are you kidding me?
Ayn Rand was her pen name, and that's fine. You know, I don't have any objection to that. But she was born in 1905. She was 12 when the Russian revolutions hit. And after the Bolsheviks won against the other group, there were the whites and the reds fighting for a while. And then the Bolsheviks won, became the Soviets, and they took away her father's pharmacy and the building that they lived in. Her father was a pharmacist. They were in the middle class. And the Soviets took away his business and the building they lived in, which he had come to own eventually. So she experienced the trauma of abusive government. I understand that. They fled to the Crimea, where she went to high school. They came back to St. Petersburg, where they lived. She went to university. But when they came back, they found another family living in their old apartment. Their house had been given away by the state. I don't blame her for being upset with a government that's overbearing. She went to university. She got purged because they just didn't like her and others because they had been members of the bourgeoisie. They really didn't like anybody who had been even moderately financially successful. And then she applied for a visa to visit the United States and trick the Soviets. She said, oh yes, I'll be back soon. And she left, never intending to return. She came to America. She was dazzled. She believed the capitalist fantasy. She thought everything is free and fair here. Merit rises to its own level. Anyone has a chance. It's all equal opportunity. Capitalism is the greatest thing in the world. So she wrote these novels depicting her views. And in her novels, good business people are the heroes against the evil oppressive government, the corrupt labor unions, and the corrupt businesses who are cozying up to the government. And most of her admirers selectively ignore the fact that she's just as opposed to corrupt business as she is to corrupt government and labor. So she writes these novels about an oppressive liberal government, and her heroes are the business leaders, because to her, she was so traumatized by the Soviet government that she saw Stalinist dictatorship everywhere she looked. She thought FDR's New Deal was going to lead to another Stalinist dictatorship.
That actually does sound like Ronald Reagan, though.
But here's the thing. Ronald Reagan, she opposed his candidacy in the 70s because she said he's not a conservative. She was 100% consistent across the board. She said no government interference in anything, and Ronald Reagan just wants to use the power of government to assist business. So he was actually doing the corruption that she opposed. She said he's not a conservative.
Okay, listeners. Tomorrow's the 4th of July. We try to do it special around here at KBOO Community Radio. And the question that we have on the table, the questions that we have are, which are the most critical ideas that you, listeners, see playing out in the daily headlines? I really want to open this up. And where did they come from? Like, I didn't know who Ayn Rand was either, although I really admire the weird old pictures of her hats from the 30s and 40s. People, call in. You know, what about the ideas behind our political system? Call in 503-231-8187. And Lululemon and Ayn Rand, it just cracks me up. And so Ayn Rand, apparently, people felt that her ideas had a big impact on, I'm taking the smile out of my voice now. People felt that her ideas had a big impact on the presidential elections, the most recent ones, and the conservative candidates, the Republican candidates that jockeyed. And, you know, there's kind of even like a race in Congress to see who can be more, I don't know, Tea Party-ish libertarian Ayn Rand. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that, Robert?
Sure.
So the Tea Party and the libertarians and Ayn Rand and how that all gets mixed up in Congress and these ideas.
Well, that's just it. They conveniently ignore her criticism of corrupt business. What they focus on is her glorification of the self and the individual and being completely self-absorbed and only caring about oneself without any government interference whatsoever. She said it's the individual, the individual, the individual. She would not accept any social obligations or even connections. She was afraid. And again, I don't blame her. I think she spent her whole life expecting the KGB to come for her in her sleep. But she wrote this view that all you have to care about is yourself. You are the end in yourself, and you don't owe anybody anything. It's okay to walk past a drowning man and ignore him. And the people who just feel like doing that anyway have adopted her rationales because she states them more eloquently than they could. It's disgusting, in my opinion.
Okay.
I don't agree with her at all. So she writes this rationale, it's okay to only care about yourself. In fact, that's the only moral way to behave. Well, in my mind, morality is just the opposite. It's caring about more than just yourself. And to me, there's nothing worse than caring only about yourself. So my book, my response, is an attempt to take her scenario and extend it into a sequel/rebuttal in which we actually see those ideas play out and we actually advocate for caring about more than just yourself. You can care about yourself, you can stand up for yourself and exercise your reason and judgment, but you're not really a complete human being, in my opinion, unless you care about more than just yourself. So in my story, I've got labor going on strike. In her famous book, the CEOs go on strike, society collapses to prove how indispensable they are. In my story, it's like, oh really? Well, what if labor went on strike? Who's really indispensable here? We need each other. And that's what my story's about.
All right. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with Robert Peet. His newest book is called Sisyphus Shrugged, and it's a response to Ayn Rand. He's going to be reading from this book on July 19th. At 7:30 p.m. at St. John's Booksellers, 8622 North Lombard Street. That's an independent bookstore. Rock on, St. John's Booksellers. And listeners, these are the questions that we have on the table right now. Which are the most critical ideas you see playing out in the daily headlines? The ideas that are shaping our communities? And where did they come from? And one of the things that really always fascinates me the most is this concept of the free market. I think we're getting to that place. The number to call, listeners, 503-231-8187, and we do have a caller. Did you say Randy? We have Randy. What's going on, man?
Yeah, good morning.
Hey.
A theme I hear expressed in the what you call progressive movement so often, and I don't understand, maybe you can explain it, is this kind of an anti-business, anti-corporate outlook. I guess it's opposite of Ayn Rand, which can you explain the kind of a bias against the free market, if I have that right?
Awesome. Thanks a lot for calling, Randy. Appreciate your question. Randy's interesting. He's coming right up. He's just putting one of the big ones right on the table. Did you want to talk about that, Robert?
Sure. And I just want to say that I'm not against business or the market at all. In fact, one of my points is that the market should work for everyone. Ayn Rand's whole philosophy is what she called rational self-interest. She said we should all base our decisions on what's best for ourselves using our reason. Well, for some reason, she translated that to mean no taxes, no regulation, no social programs. And I just think that's a very short-sighted view. I think that if you really care about your own self-interest, you will want to live in a society that works. If you care only about yourself and your business, That's fine. But when you walk down the street, you don't want to get mugged by somebody who can't find a job. You don't want to catch a disease from somebody who can't get health care. If you pay taxes and agree with regulations and social programs, you will live in a society that works, that makes you better off, not just somebody else, and actually will give you happier, healthier workers, happier, healthier customers. It will benefit everyone. Taxes are not theft. They are the fee you pay for a society that works. The people who take your taxes are not trying to trick you or rob you. They're offering you the opportunity to have a society that enables you to get rich. We want you to succeed. We want everyone to succeed. That's the point of my book. Everyone should be lifted up and doing well and making a profit, not just the few. The free market should work for everyone.
All right. You know, Randy, to that, you had a couple pieces to that question. Why are people anti-business and why are people anti-corporate is what I heard you say. And, you know, here's the thing, progressive people, there's so many people. I don't know if anti-business is, well, I don't know if anti-business is always the way to frame that, because I know so many people who are trying to do social change in terms of business and small business. A lot of the small business owners that I know are people who have progressive politics, but that might be because this is the Portland bubble, and you see people bringing like alternative ideas, alternative transportation ideas, things like that, and trying to build businesses around them, which is interesting. And I wonder too about like the distrust of business sometimes, because here at the community radio station, we actually have limits for how we can even talk about businesses. Say, for example, with our underwriting, we're not allowed to use qualitative language. Like, so when you hear the underwriting, you know, this show was brought to you by the Clinton Street Theater. This show had underwriting right now this morning. We're not allowed to say best, bigger, fastest, most delicious. We're not allowed to say that. So it's kind of interesting the way some of that stuff shakes down. But I tell you what, with the corporate thing, I think a lot of progressive people and a lot of Tea Party people too are very anti-corporate, because we have a sense that it goes back to that issue of the free market. Is there really a free market? Does it exist? We see a lot of the corporate sector, especially the biggest corporate sector in the United States, but now globally, that kind of controls our government. And that's where the idea of fascism comes from, which I think a lot of people probably point to the Ayn Rand stuff and says that's the road to fascism. But to the point to which the corporate sector can control the government, I think is what people don't trust. I think people who are libertarian people maybe think that too. So this is part of the place where we see in the more modern age, people from left and right kind of coming together on that. But you know, we just saw the farm bill that Congress passes like every 5 years or something like that, is traditionally a major vehicle for corporate welfare. I think that's a place where people that are like progressive or Tea Party people sort of don't trust the disproportionate impact that corporate sector people have on government. God, I'm long-winded. Anyway, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We are live in the studio with local novelist Robert Peet. His newest book, Sisyphus Shrugged, is a response to Ayn Rand. He has a book reading July 19th, 7:30 p.m. at St. John's Booksellers. And we're just basically saying, well, what are some of the ideas, even ideas of literary people that inform the way we live today and our, you know, our government and our even our local communities? 503-231-8187. Randy had awesome questions. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Michael on the phone. Michael, what do you think?
Well, two things. I was calling to confirm a rumor that I heard that Ayn Rand actually took Social Security. And I'm interested from a personal perspective because I'm on disability. I see that sequestration as a big policy that affects, like you said, if you see a drowning man, don't, you know, help them. I see that as affecting poor people, and it frustrates me that the mainstream media seems to ignore the fact that there's pretty severe poverty in this nation. But I haven't braved enough to read Ayn Rand, but I hear
because those are really big books. They're like door stoppers. Now keep going, Michael.
But But anyway, yeah, I was wondering if that rumor was true that you had taken Social Security. And like I said, that sequestration of policy that I think is just... I use a term that I call genocide by proxy because I've been poor my whole life, and they take away and take away and take away generation by generation. And I think now it's come to a point where it's kind of a, you know, unofficial policy, but it's like you're either going to drown or you're going to find a way to survive. Mm. So,
All right, Michael. Thanks a ton for calling. Michael put some really interesting issues on the table there. And we do have another caller, but I just want to touch on some of the things that he brought up. He's talking about, you know, we're talking about how this, you know, I would say she's kind of an obscure writer. That's just me. I would call her that. We're talking about the impact that a kind of an obscure writer has had on our modern political system and these ideas of, you know, survival of the fittest, which is kind of the theory behind free market. But go ahead, Robert. Well, was she on Social Security?
First, to answer the question, yes. At the end of her life, she was poor and not doing very well because her ideas and books had been rejected by a lot of the mainstream. And she was living in a small apartment, and her social worker persuaded her after a lot of effort to go on Social Security. It was against her views, but she reluctantly agreed, and a lot of people have called her a hypocrite for that. I don't really call her a hypocrite for that. I call her someone who submitted to reality. The problem is that she never came out with a public statement, you know, I changed my mind, I was wrong, because she didn't want to lose face. So, yes, that answer is true. Regarding sequestration and your history of economic struggle, yeah, I'm reminded of a quotation by a writer named G.A. Cohen. He said, every market is a means of predation. It's predators preying on each other, human beings preying on each other and doing all they can to exploit and even coerce each other economically. That's what the system does, this so-called unregulated free market of laissez-faire capitalism. It's all, let's let the strong prey on the weak. And that, to me, is the opposite of Morality 101. Morality 101, to me, is the strong helps the weak.
Right. And when we're talking about that, I mean, we're talking about ideas today. What is the free market? There's a fascinating debate to be had about that. Where is there a free market? In this country, there's a lot of corporate welfare that goes on, and that's a global thing. But where is there a free market? I'm just going to put this out, that the shadow market, drug dealing and sex trade on the street corner, is maybe one of the closest things that we have to something like a free market. And what do you think about that? I mean, I don't. Anyway, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We are talking about the big ideas behind, I don't know, the way we live today. 503-231-8187. We're here with novelist Robert Peet. We're talking about his newest novel, which is a response to Ayn Rand. And that's why we've been just chatting about Ayn Rand. It's like, how? Anyway, so let's just go back to the phone lines. We have Brian on the phone. Brian, what's going on?
Yeah, hi, good morning. Listen, you know, I've never read an Ayn Rand. I don't even know how to pronounce her name.
See, you anyway. You were good. You were good. You did it right. Go. Yeah.
So, anyway, you know, I've been in medical. You know, I do healthcare, and I've been, you know, doing a lot of behavioral health. And you know, I just look at Ayn Rand as just, you know, somebody who has never sought any psychological help for trauma, and, you know, and exercised it in the public sphere. You know, she basically, you know, I can't make a diagnosis of her, but, you know, she's like a sociopath. And every you know, fascist type of government, you know, in the past has always had their little writers or musicians. And, you know, we can go back and look at that. And, you know, that sort of in certain parts of their work echoed what they really want to put across. And you know, the fact that Ayn Rand collected Social Security and, you know, wasn't really for Reagan, et cetera, is not surprising. The fact is they've used her as much as, you know, they have used, you know, everybody in the country. And I think the argument is like when somebody mentions Ayn Rand, I don't even discuss it because I say, well, you know, she was a marginal writer, and she was probably had a lot of sociopathic tendencies, and I've never read her, and that's the end of my discussion, you know, about it. And Robert, I really think your novel's great, but is just sort of paying attention to somebody who actually we should be, as a nation and as a people, completely dismissing.
Brian, though, I want to jump in there and say
no,
this.
Go
though.
Ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I totally. I love your opinion. It's awesome. I mean, when I did a quick web search on Ayn Rand, like all these headlines, people are relating her even today to all kinds of things. It's like, and like you said, you never read her books. I never read her books. I know a few people that read her books. They're huge. They're gigantic books, and they're invoked all the time. So, at what point do we reach over and pull them out and go, actually, this is a good time for us, even though we have a couple phone lines, to go, Robert, what is the big idea behind your response to Ayn Rand? We didn't have a chance to talk about that yet. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, no problem, and have a great day.
You too. No, talk about partnerism.
Okay, I will. But first, I wanted to say one thing about Brian's comments. And yes, I agree with you that what is absurd does not really deserve or require rebuttal. And I didn't take her ideas or the right-wing fantasy very seriously for a long time either. But then I became aware that far too many people are taking her work far too seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And I really felt that the book deserved a serious, thorough rebuttal. Just to get it out there, because let's be honest, I think the best cure for Rand is Rand herself. I think if you read her stuff, you're horrified. You don't really need an explanation. However, for those who've never read her books, like you and many others, I wrote this so that you don't need to. I wrote this story on purpose just so that you could pick right up. All the context and explanations are there. You don't need to delve into that stuff because you don't really need to waste your time doing it. I did it for you. As for partnerism, in the book I've got, it's a sequel / rebuttal. So I've taken her characters and her story, and I've continued it. However, I've obviously, you know, got a different twist on it. But in my story, labor goes on strike, and there's one big idea proposed in the book that's thanks to my editor, Joseph Karchewski. I want to give credit. He suggested this idea, which is what I call partnerism, in which there's a law passed in my story that makes every business owned by every member of the business. So instead of now you've got managers and workers doing the work, or the workers do most of the work and the managers make the decisions and they get all the profit, well, in my